Hey there, this is the Love to Learn English podcast, and my name is Rich. Today's episode is part two of a two-part special on the rise of the Nazi Party within Europe. So if you haven't listened to the first episode already, I would suggest listening to that one first.
Hi Richard, good to be here.
Good to have you. Not so much to see you, but you're here anyway, so I guess we'll continue. All right. So, what? I only do it because I like you. So I think you should pick up from where we left off last time. So Stresemann. So Stresemann has just passed away, and what else happened?
Well, I think we ended last time when Hitler was in prison and he wrote Mein Kampf.
So do you want to take us from there?
Sure. So Hitler comes out of prison. Germany's still doing quite well economically. Then, as I mentioned in the previous podcast, Stresemann dies in 1929. This is followed actually in the same month of October 1929 by the Wall Street crash, which was pivotal in the rise of the Nazi Party.
Okay, so let's just review that vocab here. So two items I wish to review. So the first one is pivotal. Pivotal. So something that's pivotal is essential, really significant, really important. The other word here is crash. Now, you used it, the term here, to describe the event, which is the Wall Street crash. Wall Street being the financial district in New York, and a crash being when the economy declines, when it gets worse. Correct?
Correct. So the Wall Street crash, the US stock market is so important to the economy, of the global economy, that when it essentially failed in 1929, that began the Great Depression in America, where many people were out of jobs, many businesses had to close, and this had a knock-on effect to countries like Germany through the Dawes Plan that we mentioned in the last podcast that America was given aid to. That aid was removed. So Germany was in a tough place economically again after 1929.
Yeah, so I guess that provides the background really for Hitler to gain popularity. I guess something that is commonly talked about when discussing the rise of the Nazi Party is the fact that the German people in general were not in a good place, right? So I don't know if you'd agree with this, but do you think it's fair to say historically that when times get bad, people get desperate in democracies, or at least more willing to accept more extreme ideals, to use the word from last time again?
Yeah, that's completely right. And that's a trend that we see throughout history.
A trend being something that becomes fashionable, becomes popular.
Sure. We see in many different societies, countries, states, that when people are going through hard times, maybe economically or otherwise, they tend to vote for extremist parties, like what happened with the Nazis in Germany. The Nazis would blame a lot of the problems Germany had on other people. And I think, as human beings, when you're going through a hard time, you take solace in the fact that it might be someone else's fault.
Solace here meaning comfort. So you take solace in the fact, you take comfort in the fact, you get, it makes you feel better to some extent. Yeah. I guess it maybe does ask a question about responsibility too, right? Because I guess in this case, that it wasn't really necessarily the German people's fault, but it says a lot that we have to be careful about our own individual responsibilities when the world is hard, right? Because just because the world is hard does not mean you need to take these extremes. That's the warning from history, would you say?
Sure. Yeah, of course. And I think it's important to point out that even though this happened in Germany, there was even a party in the UK who were linked to the Nazi Party, were friendly with a Nazi Party, who were known to be anti-Semitic. There was political parties like this in all the countries. It just happened to be the right conditions in Germany for a party like that to thrive. So I think it's also important to remember that the German people didn't, because I think there's a lot of blame on the German people for the rise of the Nazi Party, but it didn't, not everyone in Germany necessarily knew that the Nazi Party and Hitler were going to go as far as something like the Holocaust or the atrocities they caused in Eastern Europe during World War II.
An atrocity here being like a really bad event, like the Holocaust.
Sure. And within Eastern Europe in World War II as well, they killed many of the citizens as they are passing through to Russia. It's just important to, I think, to point out that this was not in the plan. This was not in the Nazi Party brochure as they were going to the polls. So it's important to remember that, I think, because a lot of blame is placed on the German people. By some, I think.
Yeah, we cannot necessarily assume that they knew 100% what they were voting for, what they were letting happen. And I think it's also very true as well that this could have happened in many other countries. It's a really interesting point, because I guess this is the way we learned that lesson, but I think even in modern times, not to point fingers, but there are people comparable who are in power, who get voted in, who get loved, get worshipped, who do very bad things even now. So I guess it can help us understand why these people end up in power, why people go along with it, because it still happens now. It's not something that's history, it's modern too.
Definitely. And I think Germany had just the perfect conditions for it. And the rise of the Nazi Party, one of the reasons I find it so interesting is because there's so many small events that happen that may have not happened that contribute to the Nazis getting into power. You know, things like the Wall Street crash, Stresemann dying in the same month, the Treaty of Versailles, Hitler having that advertisement of the show trial that he went through just before he went to prison after the Munich putsch. All these things come together and create that perfect storm. And it could have happened in many other countries, and has done with other regimes.
Yeah, it's certainly not an original story. I think this has happened many times, continues to happen. Maybe this is the worst example we have, and it should serve as a warning. But yeah, it's something that we do still experience, and still can experience. I think even even in a country like the UK, I think we still cannot totally switch our brains off and forget about this potential. I guess sure. This is a good transition as well to the next enabling factor, the next step on Hitler's journey to power. So I think we should pick up here with the fire of the Reichstag, because that was a really important point.
Yeah, the Reichstag, if I just explain what the Reichstag was.
Oh, yeah. Please go from there.
Probably. The Reichstag was the German parliament, essentially. It was the building that all the political parties met in to discuss matters of government. So, essentially, if your listeners are familiar with the House of Commons in the UK, it's similar to that.
The White House in the USA.
Well, no.
It's a big building.
The White House is where the president lives. The House of Representatives is where government meets.
I knew I shouldn't have invited you on here. making me look stupid in front of my audience. What are you doing to me?
No, it's close enough though. In the same city. So, in 1933, the Reichstag catches on fire and is pretty much destroyed. And this is an opportune moment for Hitler in two ways.
Ooh, that's interesting. Opportune moment. So you've used an adjective there, which is opportune. Opportune is the adjective form of opportunity. Right, so there's a chance. So there's an opportune moment, there is a chance. Really interesting vocab. Sorry, continue.
No problem. So what Hitler does is that, and whether he actually started the fire or whether he was blamed, we're not sure, but the fire is blamed very publicly on a man called Marius van der Lubbe, who was a Dutch communist. Now the communists were sort of the complete opposite to the Nazi party. The Nazi party were very nationalistic. The communists were very socialist. Two ends of the political scale.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So by blaming Marius van der Lubbe, a communist, on the fire of the Reichstag, Hitler was able to pass a decree that banned the Communist Party.
Decree being like law?
Yes.
Policy?
Yeah. And because the Reichstag had essentially burned down and government was not able to be conducted in that building, that led to the passing of the Enabling Act, which gave Hitler complete control and authority in Germany, because he was allowed to pass laws without consulting the parliament. It was supposed to be an emergency act that was rulers of Germany could bring in when there was extreme situations, like, you know, when the Reichstag was destroyed. But Hitler just hung on to it and never let it go, essentially until his death.
So I guess that's another important warning from history as well, that sometimes... Sometimes a crisis can be an opportune moment for someone to take advantage of. They can put through emergency measures that are designed to be temporary, and they end up being a lot more than temporary. So that's another thing to be careful of. I guess as well, at the moment with coronavirus, we need to be careful of that, because some of these measures that we have at the moment, some of the decrees that have been made are quite oppressive. And I think we need to be careful that they don't become permanent. Although at the moment they are necessary, I think, too.
Yeah, it's all context, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think with the coronavirus, it's a lot of them are essential. And I'm not comparing the rise of the Nazi Party in only very generally and broadly, but you know, you could say a lot of people in Germany at the time probably thought the Enabling Act was essential, and that's why they that's how they allowed Hitler to gain a foothold.
To gain a foothold, meaning to. Oh, I think this comes from like rock climbing. So if you gain a foothold, you gain a safe place to put your foot when you're climbing a wall or something. So you gain security, right? You gain a good place to start from.
Sure. He was securing his political position as a German state. I suppose after the Reichstag fire and the Enabling Act, the only thing left for Hitler to do was to purge parts of the Nazi Party that were seen as that sort of extremist.
Just to go on that vocab there, you said purge. So purge means to get rid of, or in this case, it could have meant prison or to be killed, right?
Sure.
Yep. So he decided to purge some of the more extreme members. This was known as the Night of the Long Knives. Is that correct?
Yeah. The Nazi Party was organized in a way which they had. It was called the SA, which were, they're also known as the Brown Shirts, which were essentially a group of people who would go out onto the streets of Germany and physically attack people like communists, enemies of the Nazi Party. So what Hitler wanted to do when the Enabling Act was passed and he was tightening his grip on power.
His grip being his hold. If you grip something, you hold something, yep.
As he was tightening his grip on power, he wanted to make the Nazi Party look more like a government, more professional. So the Knights of the Long Knives largely executed many people who were involved in the SA, who were causing problems for the Nazis because they were just going around beating people up, and that isn't a very professional look when you're in government in a country.
Yeah. It's more like a gang, I guess, at that point. Politics, I mean, despite Hitler being obviously a person not particularly afraid of violence, politics does demand you being somewhat careful, having a good reputation, a good image. So he wanted to present that so he could get power. Probably he didn't care so much in his heart, would you assume? It was more for public relations, public image, or do you think did he actually want to purge them?
I think Hitler was, like Ernst Röhm, who was the head of the SA, he was very problematic for Hitler because Ernst was known to, well, he not known, I retract that.
Retract it means you take it back, right? You don't. So if you make a mistake with something you say, guys, you can always say, well, I wish to retract that statement, or I want to retract that statement, to take it back, to cancel what you just said.
Sure.
I bet. Do you use that a lot? Do you have to retract a lot of your statements?
Not very often, but I think when talking about history, sometimes you have to be careful with your words, because it's especially something from an event from the 1930s that you're not exactly sure if it definitely happened. But
yeah,
was heavily thought to have been a homosexual, which was completely against the Nazi party values. And, you know, he was an intense drug taker. Ironically, Hitler was later follow in his footsteps in that regard, but he wasn't seen as very professional. So Hitler did want to get rid of him, because Hitler was very, and the Nazi party in general was very geared towards discipline of their members,
geared towards, meaning focused towards. Yeah.
Yeah, they were, you know, they were very big on discipline. So, and, you know, the SA, they were very ill-disciplined in many ways. So, yeah, I do think he did want to purge them, really. I think Hitler wanted to feel like he was meant to be in the chancellor and meant to be in government. And for so many years, he had been on the outskirts of politics.
Meaning on the outside of politics. Close, but not...
Sure.
Like, if you live on the outskirts of town, for example, you live... So I think that takes us to the final point, really, of this of these two episodes, and that's to take a look at the death of President Hindenburg. So Hindenburg was the president of Germany at the time, and his death and life both had an equally important impact on the country and its history. So can you please introduce President Hindenburg?
Yeah, so Hindenburg was really important in German politics, especially after World War One. He was a very revered person in politics and within the army and during World War One. And during the rise of the Nazi Party, Hindenburg, he followed Hitler's political career to some extent, and he gave Hitler a chance to be involved in the government, in politics in Germany. I think Hindenburg thought that he could control Hitler to a degree, and he did actually do quite well at controlling him for a time. But towards the beginning, start of the 1930s, Hindenburg was a very old man. And, you know, I think it became apparent that once he passed away, Hitler was going to take over, because I think Hindenburg was very good at keeping Hitler in check, but no one else really had the power to do so. So Hindenburg was the president in 1934, and Hitler was the chancellor, which was... I can't think of an example in modern politics, but it's sort of like where in the UK we have the Prime Minister and then the Queen. But it's different in the UK because the Queen doesn't really have any power.
Doesn't Germany still have a similar
position? I'm not sure. No? I'm not sure if they do still have a president. I think they just have a Prime Minister now. I might be wrong, but I'm not sure.
I think I looked at it. We can look afterwards, but yeah, I think I looked at it with a student before. But anyway,
I know Italy does. I know Italy does. But yeah, so essentially, the president is the head of state, and the chancellor is the politician, the main politician who essentially governs the country. But I think in Germany at this time in the 1930s, the president was still quite important, and he had a lot of say in political matters. The important thing with Hindenburg was that when he died in 1934, you know, Hitler just, they didn't bother trying to appoint another president. Hitler took on the mantle of president and chancellor.
One moment there, took on the mantle of, you mean like role, position of? So he took on those extra jobs.
Sure.
Responsibilities positions, I think, is the best word here, though.
Sure. And this is, like we were talking about before, this is never one of those pivotal, key, small moments, the death of Hindenburg, because, you know, Hindenburg dies and it's the perfect opportunity for Hitler to just say, instead of, you know, having another president, I'll just do both jobs. And that's what he did. And then he became the Führer. That was it, essentially. The Nazis had full control of the German political system.
All right, man. Well, thanks for walking us through the rise of the Nazi Party. I think it was a fascinating two episodes, and I think we have covered most of the main points. Of course, it's not everything. We couldn't cover all the detail here because they're huge, huge subjects, you know. Even just a few of those points sometimes to fully explain or take hours and hours and hours or several books.
Yeah, definitely. There's and I'd urge, if any students listen to this, enjoyed the podcast, I'd urge them to sort of maybe try to do their own research. There's many books you can read in English that aren't full of academic language about the rise of the Nazi Party. And, you know, even though I am sort of I've studied history quite a lot, you know, there's people a lot more knowledgeable and probably more interesting than me to learn about the Nazi Party from. And there's a lot more details that we could have gone into. So, I don't know.
I think you're half right. More interesting.
Well, I don't know. It's interesting to me, but yeah, you can look at it far more detailed than we've gone into it, definitely.
Yeah, but this is an introduction for you guys, and I hope that you enjoyed it. And there's plenty of topics here to go out now and research and find out a bit more about the rise of the Nazis and what it still means today, what we can learn from it. I think it's a really important part of history. We can't forget it. Being British and being half Italian, there's almost no way we can avoid talking about this subject, at least at some point in our lives, and going through the history and understanding it. So yeah, thanks for doing this today, and hopefully we can do another podcast sometime soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, and all the best.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Love to Learn English podcast. Do remember to follow me on Instagram at Love to Learn English. And you can also head to my website, lovetolearnenglish.com, where you can find free transcripts for the first episodes of the Love to Learn English podcast.